Today is a beautiful, sunny, and very chilly day. So many of us are hunkered down, trying to stay warm, trying to stay safe, and trying to learn about being healthy. So this was a conference that Carol and I went to, all on pain. This was a few years ago, but the information is still pertinent, so there's a lot to learn here. This is an encore of the best of the best. So listen, learn, and enjoy, and we'll be back next week.
Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. Every week I present new and creative ways to help make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm Corrine Fornari with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And what a week we had, didn't we, Carol?
Oh, it was amazing. We attended a conference together, and it was ICIM. It stands for the International College of Integrative Medicine. It was being held in Toronto, the lovely city of Toronto. We listened to so many excellent speakers, so we wanted to bring you today some highlights from some of them.
If you have been on my Facebook page, I've been sending out pictures of slides while we were taking notes and listening to lectures. So you would be up on the fact that we were at a conference, we were studying, you would be getting some of the information. So for those who didn't, take our hands, and we're bringing you to the conference with us right now today to go over some of the information. The conference started with a bang. Well, first of all, I want to start out with what it was called. It was called Reexamining the Oath, Reversing Nutrient Depletion and Iatrogenic Toxicity. So it's reversing the individual's and the societal nutrient depletion and the toxicity that's being caused by drug medicine.
Okay, and the word iatrogenic means physician-induced treatment prescribed by a physician inducing depletion.
And so it was down to the nitty-gritty. They were going through issues and looking at them quite critically in terms of, and this is a very special conference because what this conference does is it focuses the attendee to clinical practice. And that's pretty exciting because sitting there listening to all this theory, that's very wonderful. But this conference is very clinical practice directed. But it started out with a bang. It started out with a Dr. Gifford Jones, and he's an MD, but he also has a pen name. So he's an MD, that's his name, but he writes under a pen name. For the last 40 years, he's been writing health columns in over 85 newspapers and publications across Canada. Quite a handsome man. And he was sitting on the stage. And did I say he was 94 years old?
No, you didn't say that.
Well,
yes, we need to get that in pretty quickly.
Exactly. He was 94 years old. And he said the way he wants to die is being shot by a jealous lover at 99. And he was bright, alert. He's still writing his columns. He started talking about pieces that are missing in medicine. And these are things we've all heard of. But so many of us are on, we think of the newest, the greatest, the best, the newest, the greatest, the best. We forget that it's based on a basic. And he was emphasizing, well, first of all, he started out with multiple jokes that were wonderful. He showed this man lying on his couch with his feet up, smoking a cigar, watching the news, and the news is saying about the health problems, Canadian health problems, and how a large percentage of people will be ill or are ill at this time. And the guy smoking the cigar, and he said, well, when will the government get behind all of this? And I know I paraphrased it, but did you get it? And what happens is he started out literally the lecture by bringing it back to the individual's responsibility for their own health. Also, focusing on the fact that many are not accepting that responsibility. And then he started talking about health. This was almost like a lecture given in the 80s. He started talking about high-dose vitamin C and lysine.
Well, that, right, and the basics that he uses.
And why is it important? He went on discussing vitamin C and lysine and how it changes endothelial function, how it changes and reverses cardiovascular disease, arterial disease. Because he said one of the first signs of inadequate vitamin C is endothelial or inner wall of the artery and veins dysfunction. So,
and that's how we get cholesterol, patching it up.
Exactly. And so he said, he made a statement that, let me quote this, the use of cholesterol-lowering medication is the most unethical practice ever perpetuated on an unsuspecting, trusting population. That's the way he started out his lecture. And he went on to do the history of vitamin C. So he spoke about Linus Pauling. He spoke about Leonardo da Vinci, and Leonardo da Vinci said, nature never breaks her own laws. And that's a very powerful statement. Then he talked about an alternative. If you really don't want to take vitamin C and lysine, there's an alternative. You could take Lipitor with all its side effects. And then he went on to...
And also the literature on the statins are showing that rather than lengthening your life, the statin drugs are shortening life. So what's it buying you? You're getting side effects and shortened life.
He also showed statistics on those with higher cholesterol have longer life, have better memory, have higher hormone levels, and have reduced death in men and reduced death in women. So what's wrong with this picture? Now, he went on and he had a full hour where he was talking about the benefits. He spoke about, he had polio, so he has a slight limp, but he spoke about the work of Dr. Klenner, who published in the...
Oh, that was Fred Klenner, who completely overcame any polio problems with every case of polio he ever treated. And the treatment he was using at the time was simply an intramuscular injection of back to vitamin C. So,
that's a low dose.
Yeah, and this is really the road not taken, because Dr. Klenner was presenting at a medical conference the same time the polio vaccine was introduced. So everybody thought the vaccine was, you know, the high-tech, cool solution, and nobody wanted to listen to Dr. Klenner, who was presenting his miracles at the same time.
That's pretty amazing. He also went on in emphasizing his relationship to vitamin C. He talked about the public and the medical profession in cholesterolphobia. And so he coined multiple words. He had us laughing and thinking all the same time. He talked about Klenner and the revolutionary discovery that was ignored by doctors. And he showed x-rays of people dying. And he spoke about a swine flu case where the man was dying, and his family came in and said, we want him given vitamin C. The doctor said, no, they won't do it. And the family said, then we'll sue you.
Evidently, they had a lawyer in their ranks.
In the family. And
the
then
family,
we'll sue you individually, and we'll sue the hospital. We want him to have vitamin C. So he showed pictures of the man's lungs the day that the family stepped in. And then he showed pictures of the man's lungs 3 days later. The man was in a coma. He was dying. And 3 days later, his lungs were cleared out. His breathing tube was taken out. And the doctor said, well, isn't it amazing? The antibiotics have now started to work.
Yeah, that's really, really quite funny. This case actually made the news quite a bit. I think it even made 60 Minutes, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, yes. You can see this case on YouTube.
Yes.
Adam Smith, Vitamin C, 60 Minutes. So if you type in YouTube, Adam Smith, Vitamin C, 60 Minutes, you can see this entire case.
One of the interesting things about this, as being in the compounding pharmacy business, when they had 60 Minutes, what was exposed was whose product was used, whose injectable vitamin C was used. Shortly after that film was aired, that pharmacy had the FDA in their pharmacy trying to restrict the distribution of vitamin C.
That's pretty frightening.
I know. It's just shocking.
Then he ended, and that was quite an up note and very positive, and it refocused us back to basics. And then we went on to another talk by Ross Pelton, who is a pharmacist, and he started discussing very clearly the deficiencies that are created by drugs used for cardiovascular disease. And that was an amazing talk. Carol, can you?
I'd like to just reinforce here. Ross Pelton was a graduate of the University of Wisconsin in 1966, and he has quite a colorful background. He joined the Peace Corps. He worked in third world countries. He managed a hospital, an alternative hospital in Mexico that treated cancer. He's the author of 6 books, all of which point out the deficiencies of medical treatments that we're getting today. So let's just talk about one briefly. Since Dr. Gifford Jones started the discussion on statins, he went into quite detail about the deficiencies of CoQ10.
Amazing.
That the statin drugs are bringing. And the results of that CoQ10 deficiency is that some people actually develop muscular problems so far as to have some splitting of ligaments, and you can become quite incapacitated. You also can have memory issues, particularly the one that's the most fat soluble, which is Lipitor, is causing problems with memory and then sometimes vision. And what's happening is a severe deficiency of CoQ10 is being produced. So not only is this therapy not really solving the problem we wanted to solve, but it's inducing a whole big plethora of secondary problems, a lot of them based on a deficiency in CoQ10.
Let me just quickly go over a history of CoQ10, because we all hear the word, oh yes, CoQ10, but we don't understand how profound a deficiency of CoQ10 can be. So let's talk a little bit about the history. It was discovered in 57 by a drug company. At that point,
Merck, actually.
And they were, it was extracted from beef hearts, because CoQ10 is so elevated in the heart tissue. Every little organism makes some form of CoQ10. To be alive equals CoQ10. A patent for CoQ10, the drug companies thought it was just too small to deal with. They wanted blockbusters. So they sold their patent to a Japanese company who continued working on it and started releasing it to their people. And so how do statins fit into this? Statins block CoQ10 biosynthesis, and CoQ10 is responsible for creating energy in the mitochondria. It's a powerful antioxidant. It neutralizes free radicals. The mitochondria is the number one source of free radicals, and it supports DNA repair enzymes. So without CoQ10, you're not cleaning out your energy cells, and you're not supporting your DNA. And mitochondria are very high in heart muscles. When you poison the mitochondria, the entire musculature, the brain, the heart cannot work. And
the irony is the heart cannot work.
Exactly.
And here we are trying to rescue the heart, so to speak, by statins, and we're simply shooting ourselves in the foot, creating another severe problem.
And he made another statement. He said, statins are the most successful marketing job that has ever been perpetuated in the world. And he also said that he said something very interesting. He went on to explain the side effects of low CoQ10, weakness in the heart muscle, increase in congestive heart failure, which is what we're seeing. And we also know that the ability to make CoQ10 is blocked by statins. He also said that ubiquinol is better absorbed in the body than CoQ10. So he recommended the form of CoQ10 that's called ubiquinol, which is a activated form ready to be absorbed. He also said it should be taken with some form of food or fat, which is interesting.
The original researcher actually recommended that you take CoQ10 with peanut butter.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
You remember that?
Yes,
I do.
Because of
the fat content would immediately help you absorb the CoQ10. I heard some crosstalk after that particular statement. One of the physicians said to me, you know, Carol, there is a huge body of knowledge of studies already done on the original, the ubiquinone form. And it works. And he said, I know it works in clinical practice. And he said, I don't really recommend people change, he said, because ubiquinol is quite a bit more expensive, and I'm more concerned that they take it. So I would say either form, as long as you have that in. And it is true if you use ubiquinol, you need smaller doses.
And he gave a he had a big sign up. It's not dementia. It's your heart medication. Cholesterol drugs are blocking memory. He also went on to talk about diuretics and B6 and how, and he made a list of all the different meds like ACE inhibitors are creating zinc deficiencies. Beta blockers are creating CoQ10 and melatonin deficiencies. Loop diuretics, those are diuretics that pass the kidney, are creating calcium, magnesium, vitamin K, zinc, B1, B6, and vitamin C deficiencies. Thiazide diuretics that they give out like water.
Yeah, hydrochlorothiazide.
Are creating magnesium, vitamin K, zinc, and CoQ10 deficiencies. He's got a whole big list on this. So he also talks about B6, talks about magnesium. It was quite a powerful talk. I was very impressed.
The whole idea of blood pressure is they're trying to get the blood pressure down because they're warning people that high blood pressure is going to lead to a stroke, going to lead to death. And so the technique that they use, that the diuretic drugs simply deplete the volume of the blood you're carrying around. And when you deplete your body of all that fluid, it takes a lot of nutrients with it that you have to be so careful to get back in. And how many people have their doctor tell them that you need to take multi-minerals and a multivitamin, including B6, because of this drug? It just doesn't happen. The other disadvantage of using that kind of drug is that you deplete all the fluid and your blood becomes thicker, and then blood cells are more likely to clump against each other. So what are you doing? You're making the physical nature of the blood more prone to clotting because you're getting it thickened.
Well, he also went on to talk about gut bacteria and heart and protecting the heart. If you've looked at my Facebook, there is an amazing article on the microbiome protecting the heart and what you can do to support heart health through your intestines. A large article, the link between the microbiome depleting drugs and cardiovascular disease. So he made a very strong case there on how our intestines, when healthy, when strong, protect our heart health. It's exciting. His talk was very exciting. Oh my goodness, Carol, isn't this fun? We're going.
Yep.
We're reviewing everything. We're sharing it with the audience. Everybody's learning. We're reinforcing. Well, the next speaker was Arlene Buford Mason. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Yes, Arlene is a PhD biochemist, and she she has a nutritional practice. She's been extremely active in a Canadian-based group, which is called the Orthomolecular Society. Actually, the Orthomolecular Society bases its principles on Linus Pauling's work with vitamin C. And so they believe that the answers to so many health problems are nutritional, and they particularly concentrate on some severe problems like schizophrenia and how niacin and vitamin C can reverse those problems. But Eileen often teaches. She's a well-known lecturer in the Canadian circles. So she focused her talk on one mineral depletion. Now, she's not the only one out there waving the flag on this. There are other writers. Sherry Rogers comes to mind. Carolyn Dean comes to mind. They have written books. And they're saying that we're really, really nutrient deficient when it comes to magnesium. One of the things, just since we talked about the statin drugs so much.
Exactly.
How well treating a patient with magnesium stacks up against the use of statins.
Because the statins work on an enzyme in the liver, very specific HMG enzyme. And guess what? Where does magnesium work? It works in the liver. One of 300 different functions, it works in the liver, slowing that HMG enzyme down. So we're looking at the same mechanism of action, and we're also looking at deficiency in the population. So, guess what? We got a drug for it. Carol?
In the pharmaceutical world, we look for things that block a particular enzyme. We say, oh, we're getting too much of this, so we'll block the enzyme that's making it. We're disregarding that in this process of one reaction going to another reaction to another reaction, that when something is blocked and starts to accumulate, it's because things are missing downline to break up that water log and get the other things done. And so in blocking the thing that's in excess, now we could create still another deficiency and never fixing the deficiencies that were occurring in the first place. And this is how they look for drugs. They've taken this approach, and it really does not satisfy the need. I talk about reactions. Every single reaction in your body requires a coenzyme and a cofactor. The coenzymes are vitamins. The cofactors are minerals. And like Corrine just said, there's hundreds of reactions in your body that need magnesium.
And the enzymes are protein.
Yes.
So we've gone full circle. You know what? I want to hear a little more about this, but we're going to go to a break right now. And then we will be right back and discuss a little more about magnesium. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I'm here with my favorite co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're walking you through this amazing conference we went to, sharing the information with you. Now, at the end of the show, we have a little bit of a surprise, because we have one of the speakers at the conference here with us today. Okay.
Let's take a moment to share what a low magnesium situation looks like. So in the skeleton, you have leg cramps, muscle tension, pain, restless legs, cardiovascular system. It's a source of arrhythmias, and this is getting to be more and more common, heart problem, taking people to their physicians. Arrhythmias are on the rise. Palpitations. This is very common in menopausal women to experience palpitations that take them to the emergency room. Increase of blood pressure and the smooth muscles, shortness of breath, headaches, wheezing after exercise, and then how many people are given an inhaler and instead of the real deficiency, magnesium. Frequent urination, and here's the biggie, constipation. Constipation is a huge problem in our society, and yet there's so many feet of products in the pharmacy to help you with a bowel movement, but where's the magnesium in that section to help you with the underlying problem?
It also has a very powerful effect and ability for our cells to make energy, ATP metabolism. It works with muscle contraction and the relaxation of the muscle, normal neurologic function. The ability to send signals is dependent on magnesium. Release of neurotransmitters is also dependent on magnesium. So our feel good, our calm neurotransmitters are dependent on magnesium for the communication to allow the cells to uptake them, the regulation of vascular tone, hypertension, heart rhythm, and guess what? We always hear calcium, calcium, calcium.
I was just thinking we need to make sure we talk about calcium and the problems with calcium-magnesium ratio.
And bone formation.
Right, right. So for years and years, actually I can remember in the 1970s, we first started recommending people take calcium for their bones. And you know what? Bones aren't just calcium. And that's the only thing we told people to take. And we told them to take high doses of calcium.
And who's we?
Oh, I'm guilty. I'm guilty. Everybody thought it was a good idea at the time. It just goes to show you how many things we do without adequate proof and study about it. So as it's happening, we're actually creating some serious problems with calcium. Too much calcium being taken interferes with absorption of magnesium to start out with. And then our body can't handle the extra calcium and can't put it in its bones, our bones, because we don't have the proper, we can get
vitamin
into this
K.
later, vitamin to get it into your bones.
The triage so vitamin?
Yes. So we're putting calcium in places it doesn't belong. We're getting calcifications in our breasts, and we're getting calcium crystals settling out in our knees and toes and other joints.
And in the cardiovascular, system, in our circulation, in our arteries, calcium is accumulating. And they're finding that people who take high-dose calcium have a very high percentage, significantly higher percentage of cardiovascular disease. But they also talked about magnesium and estrogen and cardiovascular disease and magnesium and hot flashes. So here we're going from something that's happening to us that we're not aware of until there's an accident to something that's just signaling us magnesium, magnesium, while these hot flashes are just taking over our life. Now, what happens is the ability to uptake the estrogen is based on magnesium, one piece of it. Having adequate magnesium allows the estrogen that we have in our bodies to get into the cells. It's not one nutrient ever. There was a really interesting in this conference, anytime someone would get up and speak about a nutrient, a nutritionist would come up and say, "We forget it's not one nutrient, it's the balance." And then she would go into the balance. It was beautiful because I see in the population that they focus on one nutrient. And it's not one nutrient. It's the balance and how the balance is created. And if we just focus on one nutrient, we can create toxicities. Some of them we know of and some of them we're learning about. And it's got to do with balance. That's the importance here. And that's one of the things that this conference really stressed. Then it went on. Another one of the speakers is someone we had on the radio, Carol. Remember her?
Yes, that was Dr. Kate Brayom Blue. She's a naturopath, and she's written a book on K2. and we were just talking about how the calcium is unable to reach its intended purpose in the bones. It's because of a lack of this particular vitamin, which we had problems with our understanding of this vitamin because there are many Ks. There's K1, K2, a few more, K3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And because K1 is particularly involved in blood coagulation and our stellar number one blood thinner, Coumadin, actually works by inhibiting K1, we sort of looked at the whole K family as being involved in coagulation, and it's not. K2 is not. So its primary function is, along with vitamin D, to help shuttle calcium into the tissue that badly needs the calcium and not let it float around in your body and get deposited in non-bone stores. So K2 is found in a real big source is natto, the fermented soy food from Japanese. It's really rich in there, but it's also really, really rich in fats in animals that have been raised in pastures.
So grass-fed.
Grass-fed.
Free-range chickens.
Right.
Chicken yolks, the yolks of
and
their eggs.
Yes, it's a fat-soluble vitamin, and it is in the fat of these animals. And so we're actually rather hurting ourselves with our industrial raising of meat. We completely obliterate this particular vitamin, and we're suffering for it, and it's leading to more calcification of our arteries. And it's the answer. K2 is the answer. So it's so important that you change your intake of food to K2. Get some K2 in it. You can also supplement it. But, you know, first and foremost, make sure your food is rich in K2.
Now, there's one other thing that I wanted to bring up. I wanted to bring up a speaker and introduce her to the audience, a speaker who was at the conference. Okay, here we go. Carol Peterson, you were a speaker at the conference, and you had you had a really interesting talk. Being a pharmacist and a nutritionist, you delved into, and a lot of what happened at this conference was about pain, and how food created pain, and how different treatments and nutrition depletions created pain, and how the pharmaceuticals are treating pain and the consequences, and how many of the ways that they're treating pain blocks it for a short period of time and aggravates it, whereas like non-steroidal anti-inflammatories block the body's ability to uptake and utilize glucosamine.
Glucosamine
heals the joints and the tissue. So you're in a circle, a loop there. So Carol spoke about pain. Carol, what was the title of your talk?
The history and mechanisms of action and side effects of pain relievers or
pain management.
Pain management. So this conference was organized so one person presented what was happening in conventional medicine, and then another would talk about what alternatives there are. And my part was to illustrate the conventional approach, but we went all the way back to the opium poppy. And I was really struck by this history as I looked into it. So we have our first written history in 34 BC in ancient Sumeria. We have been using the opium poppy even longer than that. There's fossil records of the opium poppy. And we first used the whole plant. The Sumerians called it the plant of joy, which I thought was particularly lovely. And the opiates, those things that relieve pain that are produced by that plant, could be concentrated if you cut the seed pod and the plant would sort of bleed a latex, and it would contain a rich supply of the opiates. But even the seeds, and to this day, if you eat poppy seed, you do get a little opiate, and you would test positive on a urine test. So, you know, we started out using this plant, and it's commercially one of the most important plants on our planet. We started using this as an herbologist would, making teas and poultices, and then we started smoking the latex in the Middle East, and Chinese love to put it in those water pipe things and smoke it, and it would be smoked along with tobacco or with marijuana, which was called hashish. So it was another drug delivery system. But recall, really think that we were using not just the extracts, morphine and codeine that come from that. We're using whole plant things at that point. We don't know all the other wonderful things in that plant that was helping us with pain, that all of a sudden we take another turn and we start creating molecules with the basis of morphine and codeine, but we change the configuration.
That was Bayer in 1898. Yes. Bayer created heroin.
Heroin, diamorphine, and they took opium, the whole opium, and treated it with acetic acid, which is simply vinegar, and created a whole other molecule. And heroin, the name comes from the German heroish, because the people at Bayer that were trying it out thought it made them feel more heroic. And talk about blockbuster drugs.
Oh, my goodness.
This is the world's first. And Bayer made a fortune selling heroin.
Oh, our original drug dealers. You also explained how when the adrenals are hyperactive, the cortisol is elevated and pregnenolone is elevated. When the adrenals are hyperactive due to high amounts of stress, and that's multiple levels of stress, you have increased pain. Or when your adrenals are very low, when you're crashing at that next stage after the adrenals are exhausted, the cortisol is low and the pregnenolone is low, you also have increased pain. I found that very interesting, that the organ in excess and the organ in weakness created pain, and very often through treating and supporting the adrenals. And what's one of the most important things for the adrenals is vitamin C and B5. They're very important for the adrenals. You can shift, and magnesium, you can shift some of that pain syndrome. Go on, Carol.
No kidding. What you're referring to is work published by Dr. Forrest Tennant. You can find it at ForrestTennant.com. And he has quite a bit of information there about hormone depletions caused by pain and caused by our usual pain relievers, like the opiates or opioids, referring to synthetic things that also work in the same receptors. So one of the things he really points out is that pain is a high-stress situation, and so is taking opioids. Your cortisol is high, and at first it's high and unremitting, and during this time, your body struggles to balance that high cortisol and depletes calcium from your bones in that struggle. So that situation, while the cortisol is still high, is terribly bone depleting. Eventually it goes down and you flatline, and that's when you have no energy, no ability to do anything. I don't want to forget about testosterone, because testosterone is really important in this picture. And again, both the pain and the pain relievers taking chronically deplete testosterone, and testosterone has an effect in pain in that the lower your testosterone is, the more likely the pain is more intense, so you can't cope with the pain you have. So I guess doctors are just starting right now to add testosterone to patients who are suffering with chronic pain. I don't think it's really widespread. I hear it's being done, but when I talk to individual practitioners who tell me they treat pain, and I ask them if they're using testosterone, they go, no. And they said they'd send them to an endocrinologist. But it's basic science. Measuring those imbalances in hormones can be a way to quantify how severe your pain is. You don't have to take a little picture or give numbers 1 to 10. We've been struggling with understanding how severe the pain is. The hormones, the balance of the hormones, will give you that picture. And I think this is an important key. One of the things in my talk, which was lengthier than we can go into, is people deserve to have good pain relief. And I'm not opposed to using opioids, but in doing all this research, I think we've lost something by abandoning the whole plant. We've made the opioids stronger,
toxic,
and more likely to be abused and more likely to be overdosed, most of the time inadvertently. And then they don't complete the pain picture, and we give people a number of other drugs with that drug, and there's overdosing and deaths, but the opioid is blamed and not the other drug.
It's very interesting because you brought up something very important, is that quantifying pain is close to impossible for a practitioner. Two people can walk in with exactly the same thing. Exactly. One person can't function because of the level of pain, and the other person hurts or is discomforted by it. They're discussing at the conference, and you brought up the point that the base of that difference might be hormone depletion. By balancing the hormone, you can equal out that reaction. When someone walks in to an orthopedics and talks about unrelenting pain, nobody's talking about hormones. We know that low testosterone creates poor tissue repair. We understand that. But nobody's talking about the hormones and how they fit into this whole picture and can have a very dramatic effect on a patient's ability to function within discomfort converting to pain.
There's another piece here
that I
think really applies and is an easy solution, is that people who don't get enough protein in their diet will suffer more pain. And that makes sense, too, because if you don't have protein, you don't get the raw material, the raw amino acids, to help restore your tissues. So rather than repairing, your tissues go into more disrepair, and your inflammatory proteins stay stagnant in your lymph, and you suffer. So getting adequate pain relief is important with what you eat. And one of the disadvantages of using the opioid-type drugs is your appetite is completely gone. So the side effect that you're experiencing prevents you from doing the good things your body needs to do some repair. Pretty important principle that we don't pay much attention to.
So, first of all, there were many more speakers. It was 3 full days. Oh, my gosh. What they explained about fracking was beyond belief and terrifying, and what it's doing to the water supply. And that ties into what's happening right now in South Dakota and how the Indians are protecting the largest aquifer in our nation, and they deserve our support. It's a very important statement what's happening in South Dakota, and we're looking at it from their lands, but we have to look at it in relationship to protecting our water supply, our side of the earth, and it's going to be destroyed by toxifying the water supply. And a lot was said on that. But we will be having, we just gave you little bits of highlights, just touched along, but we will be having people who were speakers at this conference come to us and be interviewing. I found it a very exciting conference. And like I started out with, it's a clinical conference. It's not only theoretical. It was clinical. Everything that was presented is usable in the office. Carol?
Oh, and practical. I hope we gave you some practical ideas today. How important it is, like, think twice about using a statin drug. Do your homework. If you are taking one, don't leave out the CoQ, and for sure don't leave out the magnesium.
And the vitamin C.
Yeah, don't leave out magnesium in whatever you do. How important pain relief can be to your quality of life, and some of the tools you can look at in helping you get a grip on pain. I shudder to think how many people are in pain. One of the speakers brought this up, and I don't think we should forget it. We get all this news about, oh, we're using so many more pain drugs. The United States is at the top of the use of drugs for pain of all the countries in the world. And one of the speakers, and I believe this is to be true, is maybe it's because we're the country that's most exposed to GMO food, to vaccines, to issues with air quality, issues with water quality. We may be creating our pain. And this is a widespread problem. Pain is a huge issue.
So we have to end on that note. What we ended with was a few facts and a lot of questions, and that's important. So we will be back next week. It's been fun, Carol. Always a pleasure doing this.
Likewise.
With you. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be
okay,
back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Concluding today, I'd like you to remember, this information is not a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share to your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can find me on Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, that's CorinneFurnari, or my website, FornariHealth.com, or my office number,
212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700.
Thank you for sharing this time with me, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. De dia eu peço a luz, me proteja. À noite eu peço a paz, apareça. Pra gente viver, falar de amor, de mim, de você. Como é bom. Se o tempo traz, se o tempo leva o nosso amor. Se o tempo traz, se o tempo leva o nosso amor. A gente se ama. Nunca se cansa.
A gente viver.